All right. Today is Thursday, January 14th, 2021. First episode of this new year. So far, we've been off to a bumpy start. But it's Luca here, and we got Ferris.
I'm here. Welcome back.
Yes. We got some exciting new things to say. Only 2 weeks into the year, and it looks like our republic is on the verge of collapse. So, Ferris, tell the audience, and tell our viewers and our posterity what is going on in our country right now. The turbulence that has rocked our nation. The tumult that has convulsed our political arena.
Yeah, I mean, where do we start, really? It's off to an extremely bumpy beginning with the raid of the Capitol. I don't know what you would call that. Maybe a raid, maybe a...
insurrection, that's what they're using.
Maybe a riot. What was the word they used?
Insurrection.
Insurrection?
Yeah. That word. You haven't heard that word in a while.
Yeah, we're like making history every single day.
Last time I heard that word was an A-push.
Oh, that's why.
During the Articles of Confederation.
The
first 20 years of the United States, when every farmer...
That's when the word first came out.
When every commune was rebelling against the government.
Yeah.
Remember the Insurrection Act? I remember reading about something about that.
Yeah, that's why I thought of it, from A Push.
Well, that's why they were calling it this.
Because that's when everyone learned what the word meant, right?
They were invoking, if you didn't sleep through that class, you learned what it meant.
You slept through that class. Let's be real here. Mm. You already knew everything. You came to class just to review. You came to class to review. Relax.
I came there to hear Bromito tell me about the high life.
What a great guy. Back to the insurrection. Insurrection, Luke, take us away. Explain, actually, if you don't want to, we don't have to. We can move on to another topic, something of...
Let's talk about the insurrection. So what happened was January 6th?
6th, yeah.
6th or 7th? 6th, right?
I'll check just to make sure.
Yeah, on the 6th of the 7th, the day that the Senate was confirming the election results, Donald Trump, our president...
had a rally that same morning.
Yes, that same morning, somewhere in D.C., and there's thousands of people who showed up, and he urged his supporters to storm the halls of power and to stop the rigged election. And they heeded his call, they answered it, and in a few short hours, they were storming the Capitol and breaking into the House of Representatives, breaking into the Senate. They broke through the police barricades, which were surprisingly understaffed. The police didn't have the numbers to hold back this throng of people that swept across the National Mall and then into the Congress building, into the Capitol building itself. And there were five people who died, one from a gunshot wound. One was an Air Force veteran. She was 34 years old. She died from a gunshot wound to the neck Capitol Police officer who was holding back a mob of people who were trying to break through the doors. There's videos of it all over Twitter and YouTube.
Yeah.
Tragic. And then the other people died from medical emergencies. I think it was like from heart attack, or just scattered incidents of that.
Yeah.
But the most highly publicized fatality was from that one woman, Ashley Babbitt was her name, I think.
I don't recall, and
first name was wrong. Yeah, for sure. But
they already have articles as if it was a historical event, you know. The storming of the United States Capitol was a riot and violent attack. So it is a riot. Violent attack against the 117th United States Congress on January 6th, 2021, yeah. Carried out by a mob of supporters of U.S. President Donald Trump in an attempt to overturn his defeat in the 2020 presidential election. Wow. Mm. It's stated as if it's a historical, you know, moment.
Whoa,
but it just happened just 7 days ago, right?
Well, it is a historical moment. Was it January...
January 7th.
7th. Dude, this is
6th. 6th. It is the 6th.
It was a little over a week ago, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that was a historical moment, dude. We're going to be... Our kids are going to be reading about that in history textbooks.
In their A-Push textbooks.
That's right.
Isn't that insane? We're making history every single day, and it's actually going to be studied.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. It's like, sometimes I wonder, like, I'm always interested in church, asking, like, people who are, like, in the 60s and 70s about, like, what it was like during Vietnam and all that.
Yeah, they're going to be asking us how it was back in 2020. Now
our kids are going to be asking us, what was it like when Donnie came to power?
Yeah.
And then when he lost and then came back in 2024, right? That right?
Yep. And now his daughter coming in as well.
Oh, boy. She's going to run as his VP.
Oh, I heard she was going to run as VP. Really?
Oh, I don't know, dude. I don't know what's
really
going on.
I don't know. They already have their campaign set up. They know what they're doing. They're doing something in politics.
Oh, boy. Well, Ronald Reagan was, I remember he was the oldest president up until then, and he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's like a year or two after leaving office or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that reminds me, that brings us to our next people in power. Our beloved Bezos, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk.
Giving him too much airtime.
They want to come into the political realm. They do. There's been some rumors that they might want to run for 24, you know.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like for president?
And I mean, they could win, theoretically.
Yeah, all Bezos has to do is say that he'll increase the wages of his employees by $1.
All his Amazon employees
by $1 if they vote for him.
Will win for him, you know?
Uh-huh.
But let's take a gander into a different topic. So CEO Bezos and CEO Musk, they know what goes on in their companies, right? They know all about their hiring process. They know about everything.
Musk can't run for president. He's not a native-born citizen.
This is true, correct.
But Bezos, on the other hand, that's dangerous.
Yeah. So you know how they both are CEOs. They're very, very connected to their companies.
Yeah.
They both mention things like about their hiring process, about how, I care about someone with passion.
Yeah.
Why do I need the education? Why does someone need the education? Blah, blah, blah. Right? They're throwing around these words of passion, drive, and that they'll hire anyone who, you know, has these qualities over a stronger education. Right. Thoughts, lies, hypocrites.
Well, why don't you tell me what you think?
I need to hear it from your point of view because your experience with Mr. Bezos himself.
Well, I think he was probably referring to roles that are salaried, not entry-level positions. Entry-level positions, you don't need really any qualifications apart from being able to stand and carry 50 pounds, all right, for 8 hours
straight. Your favorite quality.
That's right.
To have.
I think you need a good balance of education, of talent / education and of drive. You can't just have an army of mindless, you know, geniuses.
Mindless that.
And simultaneously, you can't have the opposite. You can't have a group of really motivated but completely untalented and untalented people. I think I think conviction drives education. I think that it sustains it. It fuels the need for a person to become educated. A person reaches the milestones that he or she needs to reach if he or she has the appropriate motivation.
Definitely. It's needed as well as all these other qualities.
Right.
You know, it's not in substitution.
Right.
Which is almost how they portrayed it when they discussed it on an interview or a podcast or something of that sort. Musk was very, very adamant about it. Okay. That, I'd rather take someone with XYZ over, you know, another 4 years of education. Whereas, personally, I don't believe that is true. I feel like if he saw someone with a master's and a great resume, how are you going to convey this drive, passion that you have with your bachelor's? You know, how are you going to do that, Luke?
Amazing point. I was just going to say it's hard to convey that drive.
Amen.
In a job application cycle where you have literally thousands of people applying.
Exactly.
And you have an algorithm that just cuts off like a chunk of the applicant pool simply because
they don't have a certain quality listed, a certain word, some buzzwords.
Exactly. They don't have the right buzzwords, or they don't have the right years of experience, or they don't have the appropriate amount of education. I mean, it sounds good. I'll give you that. It sounds good. But when it comes to like the nitty gritty, like the actual application for a job, it's hard to
convey. Yeah, how are you going to tell them that? How are you going to tell them that without a speech?
Unless they're reading cover letters. And they have robots who are doing that. But they just pick out buzzwords.
And again, they're picking out buzzwords and things that are going to relate to your experiences and whatnot to build on your professional aspect.
Robots aren't advanced enough to detect true motivation and conviction, like where your person
is. It's hard to get it through writing, though, regardless. Even if it was an HR department specialist reading it.
I think it's not hard to get it through. But are the HR people reading through every single cover letter?
You know, not skimming, putting in that time to read a full page. Yeah,
I mean, I certainly wouldn't be reading every single one. If I had 1,000 applications,
well, there you go. You answered all of our questions, so we know. Yeah, no, it won't.
In theory, I would love to give every person their time of day, but in practice, it's hard to do. Unless you have 100 people reading.
Once you get to the interview, then you can throw in that passion, drive, and that commitment, that loyalty that you have for this company. And that's where you can, you know, shine. But until you get to that point, you need to have a cookie cutter, you know, all the buzzwords, all the things from the job posting in your resume, right? Catered towards...
Now, if the application process for these jobs was resembled more the process of applying to colleges, for instance, right? Where grades and numbers matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they put you into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really ultimately your personal essays and your personal statements that push you across the finish line, right?
Okay.
Because like the people applying to Harvard, for instance, right? They're all valedictorians. They all know. The admissions people know that they're all geniuses. They all have 5.0s and all that.
Yeah.
They have 2,400 or 1,600s on their SATs now. But what are they really looking for? They're looking for somebody who's got potential. I mean, Harvard's a millionaire daycare, pretty much. Also, they're just incubating those millionaires. Wow. I think I was reading something about like a former Harvard professor said that 40% of Harvard's students or alum after 10 years after graduation are millionaires. 40%. It's literally just it's a millionaire incubator school.
Wow. That's...
After 10 years...
That's... Extraordinary. Wow.
40%, dude.
Going there gives you a 40% chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, not only do you have the passport, not only are you naturally intelligent, you have to be intelligent to get into that school, but also you're integrated in a network that is the best in the world, right? You have a passport that will take you anywhere.
Going there inserts you into that, gives you that 40% chance to be within those one percenters or whatnot.
Really, if you think about it, the game for, you know, the key is to get into a good school, and then, you know, perform well in that school, but for many of these people, it's just, you have to get into the school, and after you've crossed the finish line,
then you've made that connection, foot is in the door, right?
Getting your foot in the door there is the hardest, right?
That is the most demanding task.
It's always been hard, it was ever thus. It would always be like that, getting your foot in the door.
Being an outsider is not ideal. In any situation.
And you have to consider, we live in one of the most meritocratic nations in the world.
Yeah.
Like, if it's this hard here...
Imagine what you
would
have to
unless you're daddy or you have an uncle who is like works at whatever company you want to work at, no chance you're ever going to get there.
They're never going to hear of you.
Yeah. I mean, thank God we live in this country, man. I say it every day, but it certainly doesn't mean that it's easy.
Definitely. Where did I want to go with it? Did you have a topic you wanted to throw in here while we have a quick break?
I don't know. What do you have next?
I know we need to discuss your one and only OF.
My what?
Your OnlyFans account, Luke. The one you just recently made. You wanted to try.
Right.
Then working as an independent contractor on OnlyFans.
Yeah, for the tax breaks.
No, you're getting taxed on this. Don't worry. You're getting taxed on all your earnings here. Oh, is it?
Oh,
thoughts?
Thoughts on independent contractors?
On your...
I completely support them.
No. Starting with OnlyFans, we'll work our way into all of the other independent contractors as well.
Didn't we already discuss this?
You know what? No, you didn't. Luke, I didn't get a concrete response from you.
What's the question then?
What do you think about OnlyFans? Do you support the body positivity, the many different things you can do on the platform? Like some are hosting fitness courses or fitness videos. Others are, showing themselves, showing off.
Advertising themselves.
Sure. Marketing their...
Soliciting donations.
Their God-given beauty.
That's right.
Soliciting donations. Okay. All right, Luke.
Making use of their assets.
Okay. So... Awesome. Well, I'm glad you're on board with that platform. Moving on to things like Uber Eats.
What about
DoorDash? Grubhub? No, not Grubhub. Where is it? Instacart?
Yeah.
You've heard of Instacart. Wait,
why not Grubhub?
They're just for... you don't have drivers for that, right? I don't know how that works.
You do.
Like, I could sign up to be a driver for Grubhub right now.
Well, they deliver. They have drivers.
I don't know. I didn't.
No, it's the same thing.
I haven't gone through their application process. I haven't actually. You know,
I don't think I've.
I haven't gone through that ringer. You know.
I think
I've done DoorDash, Uber Eats, Instacart, and.
Instacart is good.
It's, yeah, well, that one pays really well. Yeah. Well,
Instacart is just time consuming.
Yeah, it takes.
It's frustrating. I remember when I was working at the wine store. We need to get some Instacarters in there. Oh my gosh, they were the most annoying people ever. Because they would like harass the employees to have us help them find every single thing in the store.
Ah, gotcha.
By the end of the day,
so you're doing their job.
By the end of it, I was like, we would just tell them like, "Are you going to pay us as well? Are you cutting us into the profits?" And they would be like, "No." And then we would just be like, "All right, cognac's over there in that part of the store. Vodka's over there. Beer's over there.
That's dirty.
Help yourself.
That's dirty, Luke." He's just asking for your help.
No, he's asking me to help him find 16 different items that are located in 18 different parts of the store.
For you to help, you know,
to help him make a living.
Adventure. It's an adventure for him.
Well, he's getting paid for it. I've got my own job.
Yeah, and you're getting paid regardless, so you can help him. What's the issue here?
It's not worth the stress.
Oh,
I've got
really?
You're
stressed out even though you know
I've
the store.
I've got other
like
more important clients who I need to attend to.
Okay. You flirting with the mothers you like to be effing is
Relax.
A totally different situation, okay? That is totally irrelevant to you being an employee there
I'm not one of our friends. We won't name him, but I'm not one of our mutual acquaintances.
Luke.
He's only interested in the
you were too busy
adult
flirting
category.
With the shoppers that you didn't want to help the Instacarters. Am I wrong or am I right? Am I right or am I right, you know?
Of course I'm not going to be helping the Instacarters.
When you
could
be flirting with the shoppers.
No, when I'm doing my digital orders, bro.
Okay. That's what it is, right? So your take on those independent contractors is very low by the sound of it.
No,
you don't like Instacarters.
I support them wholeheartedly.
You don't like them at the
job.
Liquor stores is what I'm hearing.
No, I think it's great. It's a great opportunity, but
okay.
As long as you do it yourself.
Don't harass the people who work in the
stores. As long as you're not, it's just unethical, dude. It's unethical to have somebody else do your job for you.
I mean, they're still driving it, paying for it, taking it from the store to their car, whatever, getting it to the person's
and
door.
And you're pulling an employee away from other customers who actually need his help,
Definitely.
Or his or her help. It's just, the gall on these people is just... They have the guts to ask the employees for help finding 8 different bottles scattered through every single corner of the store.
Well,
like,
maybe
are you
that's
serious?
The issue with the store's setup. The layout just isn't
there. There's signs everywhere. It's like at Vaughn's, you know. There's signs everywhere. You know, just follow the arrows and you'll get to your destination.
Yeah, you'll find the cognac.
Apparently,
you're
some
for.
People can't read. I don't know. We have a pretty high literacy rate in this country, so I don't know what's holding
that's
them back.
That's what it is. Okay. But when it comes to Uber Eats, DoorDash, no complaints there.
I think it's great. I mean, we're doing it, aren't we?
Yeah. You want to see us having benefits as well?
Oh, dear.
You want us to have all of the above?
Oh, dear, dude. It's an important and valuable service, especially at a time when, especially right now, people need jobs.
More than ever.
And restaurants are all closed. Those drivers are literally... Well, not literally, but they are upholding the restaurant industry, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because unless a restaurant has its own delivery drivers, and I mean, no, like people have to go out of their way to pick it up.
Well, the worst is that, you know, these applications take a lot of, a huge cut. From the actual order, I believe it is. They take a percentage of the whole order, amount, payment, whatever. So there's a cut being taken, and these businesses, small businesses or large businesses, mainly we're going to focus on the small, they're staying alive, but they're still getting, you know, taxed. by the service to stay alive.
I'm not saying it's a perfect solution.
Yeah.
I mean, in a perfect world.
Because we have to remember, if they weren't even on the app, how many people would know about them, would take take the chance and try them, right. You know, when they're just like, I'll sit here and wait an hour for food, right? You know? But at least it's getting there. They never would have heard about it if they didn't see it on the application. So there's some positives, but there's a huge cut is what I've heard.
Well, yeah, there's going to be fees. Well, they have to charge. They have to pay for the drivers and they have to pay for the service.
No, I heard the application, like let's say DoorDash, takes a percentage of the total order, like the value of the order.
Yeah, they display it as a separate fee, like the service fee. There's a service fee, and then there's a delivery fee, and then you can add the tip. Yeah, of course, it's an
everything. I only remember when Mark told us, because Mark, our friend, works in a food truck where they have a separate device for each application running.
Yeah,
so they can get orders from different.
When I was working at Menchie's, we had the same thing. We had three different tablets open.
Okay, and do you know what the percentages are for what they take for an order, like from here, there?
I don't remember. I remember seeing it, but you can see the sum that's deduct or that's added to the original cost on the app when you're checking out, mm-hmm. because there's a service fee. It says service fee, delivery fee, and then you can add a tip.
No, but how much do they lose from that full order?
Well, that service fee is what goes to the app.
Oh, no. I heard that from the $10 of, let's say, your Menchie's order.
Okay, let's say...
$10 order is now... The company's only getting $8, and then DoorDash is getting $2 more.
4 years ago, when I was working, you know, the things could have changed, but 4 years ago, we got the full sum of money. And then the app, and I think it was Uber Eats, and we had Grubhub that we were using at the time. They took their own fee that they displayed to the customer when they were purchasing it on their app.
So that's just an additional fee.
It's like an additional $2
or $1. The convenience fee or whatever they call it.
And then there's a driver's fee, and then there's a tip. Yeah, by the end of it, you're paying like $20 for something that would have cost $10. It's like what our friend Ted was saying, that you know, you buy one burger from McDonald's and it ends up costing $10.
Yeah.
You know, by the time it reaches you.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, it's pricey for sure.
Definitely,
it's pricey,
yeah.
But there's no alternative at the moment until they open up restaurants, and that won't be for a while, at least. I think the way things are going now, it looks like we'll be waiting at least through the summer, and maybe even through the fall, until at least everybody in the urban areas are vaccinated, and things get under control more or less. LA County is still, you can say metaphorically, burning. It's in flames.
Thousand Oaks is actually burning right now, so.
What?
Thousand Oaks is on fire currently.
What?
They've been battling some brush fire. Saw it on ABC 7 LA this morning.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
But Los Angeles County has been especially hard hit. We were kind of like where New York was at the beginning of the pandemic. Remember that? Remember when New York was taking the brunt of the blow?
Yeah, I recall. Wow. Time has really flown by.
Yeah. Thousand Oaks firefighters gain control of a 250-acre brush fire in Thousand Oaks.
There it is.
Yeah. Unusual to find fires during the winter, especially in January. Firefighter, let's see what agency responded.
Should I be ready to switch up topics for you, Luke? After we get through the relevant news.
What do we got next on the docket?
Why don't you throw one in for us? You know, spice things up a bit.
Spice things up?
Yeah, you like to ask me to bring all the ideas to the table, you know?
Is that so?
Pull your own weight.
Oh, is that... Okay. All right. Ferris. So, I was listening to a podcast, another podcast, by the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative, and they interview a bunch of luminaries and leading professionals in the field, in the humanitarian field.
Okay.
And I was listening to an episode, a particularly engaging episode, with a number of health professionals who were in Africa during the 2018 Ebola outbreak. You know, like they've been having outbreaks since. I mean, they've had over 30 outbreaks since 2014. Isn't that crazy?
It's very insane that disease is still around.
I remember learning about Ebola in school, and it was kind of this, we understood it was this rare disease that, you know,
sells. Extremely rare, would never make its way to us. Very concentrated in that one area.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And the disease is murderous. It kills people so quickly that it doesn't have time to spread. That's how effective it is at killing people. That there's people die too quickly for them to spread it. Like, it's not like, yeah, that's actually interesting, right? You know, like, a disease can be so effective at killing people that it's actually not good at it's not good at infecting a wide number of people.
What a concept.
But these physicians were talking about the response in 2018 and how in the DRC, since there was a lot of propaganda being spread by various militias and political factions alleging that the outbreak wasn't serious, that the Ebola threat wasn't real. It didn't pose a real threat to the country. And it's funny because this episode was recorded in 2018, and it's exactly what we're seeing now in the U.S. with regards to COVID pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's used as a political tool, and it was the same exact situation in the DRC. There were some groups that were fighting against the government who were you know, spreading these conspiracy theories about how the outbreak was all fabricated. It wasn't actually going on. There was no people who actually... nobody was actually dying from this.
That it was a scamdemic, right?
That's
where the word came from, right?
It was a planned demic. There we go.
There you go.
Planned demic. That's what they were using that at the beginning?
Yeah.
It's interesting, right, how a public health issue can be used as a political tool to further a group's interests. It's dangerous. I was also reading a book this morning about humanitarian crises and how, like, when you think of a humanitarian crisis, what picture comes to mind? Like, what are the words that come out?
Humanitarian crisis.
Yeah.
Is about what I'm thinking of, the things we want to attack.
Like, no, just what comes, what has come to mind?
Homelessness.
Is that a humanitarian crisis?
Does it meet...
It's a crisis, for sure.
Does it meet the qualifications for humanitarian crisis?
Like the sort of crisis where, like, the UN gets involved, or, like, you know, those, like, sorts of crises, like a tsunami wiping out, like, some city in Thailand or Indonesia.
That kind of humanitarian... Okay.
Or, like, Somalia, or...
What? Then I would think of an earthquake.
Earthquake?
A large earthquake, like in Haiti. Okay.
What do you picture happening in a place that's been affected by a disaster? Or a humanitarian crisis, like famine.
Oh, that kind of... That's a good example. Famine.
Like, what do you picture the country being like?
Suffering, broken, rebellious, anarchist. Just going wrong in all aspects, I guess. Because there's no real control if you don't have stability, right?
Right.
So, it's going to be extremely... You got to start... from the basic needs to make your way back up to having a working government or some type of control.
It's interesting you mention that, because the authors of this book, who are these a number of Dutch researchers at this university in the Netherlands, specialists in disaster studies, they said that most of us, when we are asked about humanitarian crisis, like, the things that come to our mind is, like, a country in disarray, right?
Okay.
The government's dysfunctional completely. Institutions have just, there's no control, there's no stability.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, if you look at what happens, like, if you do a case-by-case study, for the most part, institutions are not non-existent. They haven't dissolved. They're still there. There's many institutions. Power is distributed unequally. And in most cases, power is actually, it reinforces the current regime. And, like, the current regime uses the crisis to enhance their power. For instance, in, like, Somalia, during their crisis back in 91, 92, when the UN got involved, and there was a civil war that was ongoing for many years, and then famine struck, right?
Okay.
And Somalia this nation the size, literally, if you look at the map, it's only like a little sliver of the east coast of Africa. Okay. But that little sliver is like the entire east, like eastern seaboard of the U.S.
Gotcha.
It's insane. I saw the nation of Somalia superimposed over the U.S. and it's like the entire eastern, the east coast of the U.S. is wow. Somalia. So anyway, this country was experiencing strife and civil war, and then the famine hit, and the warlords who were vying for control were using the famine to consolidate their power and to use aid as a weapon.
Okay.
And actually, it contributed to even more deaths. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people died. That's when the UN got involved, and then okay. the UN couldn't do anything. Then the US got involved, and we had Black Hawk Down. Yep. And that didn't work out too well, so the US pulled out, and then the UN pulled out, and things went back to normal. Well, things, not normal, things went back to how they were before we entered the arena. But
wow.
Will, do you think it's possible? Do you think we're making a difference in like going overseas and helping out people? Because that's one of the central questions this book was asking. Like, do other nations mm-hmm. make things worse by going in and trying to fix things? Or is it to the benefit of the people who are affected?
See, I want to hope that it's in benefit in any way, shape, or form, that it's a benefit to the people there suffering or experiencing this hardship, whatever it may be.
Right.
But I really can't speak on it from a greater standpoint.
Let's talk about like an example that we're familiar with. Like what happened in Bosnia and Serbia.
Okay, we're not familiar with that either, okay?
During the war.
We were still in the wombs. We were children, Luke.
What's Bosnia like right now?
You know, it's not bad. It's functioning. What do you want to know about it?
What do your parents think of NATO's involvement in Bosnia?
Okay, I'm not going to speak on them either.
All right.
That's a question for my mother and father, Luke.
All right. Well,
after visiting, you know, I can see that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. Reconstruction, restoration, specifically for like buildings, old complexes.
Okay.
Some forests still have active landmines.
Sounds like you need to go back there and start an engineering firm.
It says, like, kids just don't come here to play.
Need to go.
They say don't come to play here because there is no way of them getting rid of these landmines, which are still active. And every once in a while, some kid will wander in and accidentally hit one. You know,
they think they're picking up a frisbee and they end up stepping on a landmine.
No, they're going to run through on accident. And they don't notice that, you know, there's active landmines. They don't read the sign or whatnot. So these are things that I think need to be addressed immediately. Other than also some of the like destroyed or half torn like buildings that are, you know, like shacks or like, you know, the bullet holes or like where there's still like shrapnel in the walls or where it blew out certain buildings. These kind of things I feel like should be addressed. Just to, I guess, paint that picture that, hey, we are handling this because it's been so many years now, you know? Why is this still an issue? Why is this still lingering here? You know, the landmines, like, how can you get over that? You just put a fence around it and call it a day? I mean, you could, right?
Well, they're demining it actively, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Last time I checked with them, that's still a thing.
That's tough, dude.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know. Like you say, like, what is it called? Third world? I hate to do my people like that, but I don't want to put them down like that.
We're changing the terminology now. Now we're using developing nations and developed nations and underdeveloped nations. Yeah, it's really hard to come up with a terminology without offending somebody.
Exactly.
We can't. We're afraid of calling things by their names because we're gonna offend somebody. You can't go around these things without offending somebody.
Yeah,
you're always gonna end up offending somebody. You try to please everybody, you end up pleasing nobody.
Yeah, you can't be too sensitive.
I mean, how else are we gonna organize the countries? Like first, second, and third doesn't do it. Like literally numbers. I mean, we think that the saying underdeveloped is gonna be any better than third world.
Yeah, I think the terminology makes it sound.
It's actually a linguistic phenomenon. It's called euphemistic fatigue.
This is your forte.
Don't quote me on that. I think it might have been worded a little differently, but it's euphemistic fatigue.
Okay.
Euphemism fatigue. where you use up a euphemism so much that you get tired and you have to switch it to something else. You know, like it's how they used, like how they used mental retardation for a long time. Yep. And that was considered a euphemism back then. And then over time, it started catching a bad, you know, a bad reputation, got some unsavory connotations. And before long, it's, what's the term we use? What are the terms we use these days? Like mentally handicapped. And then that also fell out of favor. And now it's like... differently abled?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Mentally disabled is also one of those that's being retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mentally disabled, handicapped. Yeah, it's differently abled. Yeah, in 5, 10, 15 years, differently abled is going to get, really offensive.
I don't mind the disabled, I think the logo goes with it right here, you know.
Yeah.
It says disabled on the parking spots, you know, like. I don't know what else you'd want to change it to, right?
I mean, tell that to the people who are changing these names.
I don't know.
So they're just going to keep on changing out terms. So, anyway, returning to the issue that we started with.
Humanitarian crisis.
Yeah.
That's where we started, and...
Will the issue, do you think, in your expert opinion, do you think that the ethnic issues... between Bosnians and Serbs and Muslims and Christians and all the Hindus and Buddhists over there in Serbia, do you think those are ever going to get resolved?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Or is it going to be like Israel and Palestine fighting to the death forever?
I should ask a more cultured Bosnian. Well, not like myself.
Has that problem always been there, or is it recent? Like, historically.
You know, I feel like they're growing out of it. The whole pointing fingers and whatnot. I feel like, just based off my family, you know, they're not diehard for anything.
Yeah.
Like, they're very flexible, I guess. You know, they're very open-minded. They're not really those kind of people to hold a grudge, right?
Okay.
And, you know, they all live through it. So if they can not hold a grudge... and, you know, meet new people here and not have any type of misconception or stereotype follow that first introduction with a, you know, whatever. I think that's very progressive, right?
I think it is. It would be interesting to know what the history of it, like how many centuries, if that long, like does this feud, has this feud, like, and why are there Muslims in that region in particular? Are they like part of the Arabic settlers who were like back in the Middle Ages when they were working their way into Europe?
That's a great question,
Luke. Like, how are there Muslims in the middle of like Bosnia?
You know, I remember learning the history.
Is it because when the
it escapes me,
the Ottomans or Persian Empire, well, it's not the Persian Empire, crap, whichever empire, the Arabic Empire was penetrating into Europe, and then they were stopped by a combined like European force somewhere in Eastern Europe, I think it was.
It might have been
the Muslim settlers who like stayed in that region.
I feel like, I don't think it was settlers. It was adopted from, you know, we really shouldn't speak on this if we don't know for sure. Yeah,
right,
we need to whip out our AP Euro textbooks.
Yeah, we don't need,
you know?
We don't need to speculate. Let's talk about something we do know, and that is...
nothing. Nice.
The job market has been particularly tough on people, especially from our generation, you know, graduating, especially this year, with the perhaps the toughest job market in recent memory. It might even be worse than it was in 08.
You know, we're making history every day.
Yeah. Dude, sometimes I wonder, like, what it was like to graduate in 08. Now I don't even have to wonder. Now I know. We're coming up on 7, 6, 7, 8 months, and I still have not found.
It's 8 months. Wait, Wait. 8 months.
Since graduating in May.
Really?
Yeah. So, May, June, July, yeah, August, September, right. October, November, December.
Oh, you count May. Okay.
January. Yeah, 9 months. Never mind.
Well, if you're counting May.
Yeah.
I didn't know you graduated in the beginning of May. You graduated, like, late May, right? Oh, I wasn't going to count May.
Eight months. Yeah, dude. It's, that's wild, dude. And, yeah, I still don't have a job. You know, I actually was talking to an alum from my school who ended up working at, she ended up going back to school to MIT Business School.
Nice.
To Sloan. And then she ended up working as an associate at McKinsey. So she landed well in the end. But for those first 3 years after graduating in 08, she was just hopping around from one job to the other, like random gigs, you know, things that she didn't even bother putting out on her resume before deciding that she wanted to go back to school, to go to business school.
Wow, well, it worked out, right?
I guess what I'm saying is it might take a little while before you land on your feet, especially graduating in such an exceptional year like this. Another thing, actually just a thought that occurred to me, especially right now, you have to hurry up with the job hunt because in a few short months, we're going to have a whole other group of kids who are entering the job market. I'm sure many of them are applying jobs right now alongside us. But the longer we wait, the more people are entering the job market and the more competition you have.
Yeah, apparently December, January, the worst time and also the best time to apply or be graduating or trying to get a new job because
why?
You're starting that new fiscal year. They're looking for new hires at the beginning of the year. But then I also heard, there's still all of the holidays going on. Everything jam-packed at the end of December, making it, you know, like 4 weeks of people not working. Mm. Taking extended vacations right. And whatnot. So
Being ghosted by employers left and
right.
Yeah,
yeah. Being left on red for absolutely every message. Right, Luke?
It's a gnarly feeling.
Yeah. I don't know. So I've heard both ends of the spectrum for that. What do you think?
I mean, it makes sense. The end of a fiscal year. I've seen a lot of job postings these past 2 weeks, especially this past week.
And even end of December, right? Or December in general, right? You saw a bunch?
Nothing out of the ordinary, but this, especially now, I saw a lot of applications, a lot of positions posted on the sites that I'm looking at right now, especially like on the 6th and the 7th. There's a bunch came out.
That's when they went back to work.
I guess, yeah.
Theoretically, yeah, because and they don't consider it the start of the new year until like the 4th for a working day, right? Because that was Monday.
Yeah.
That was Monday, and then, you know, everyone's still hung on Monday.
Right, right.
They're still hung over completely, that's so right. You got to wait a couple of days.
Yeah.
When the Advil kicks in.
No,
you're
right.
Back on your feet.
My man. No, yeah, you're right. Let's keep on
hoping. Even consider
hoping
that.
For the best.
The next round of employees.
It'll all work out fine, dude. It'll all work out.
Yeah, with all this virtual learning, though, they have nothing over us. They're also not passing all that. No one goes to class anymore. I see kids playing outside all day, every day with their parents. No one needs to make money to live in a $5 million home here.
Oh, boy.
You know, no one's car left the street. No one's gone to work.
Yeah.
No one's working because they're not on their laptop. So it must be passive income, right?
Well, we're going to have to start our own entrepreneurial projects then, huh?
There you go.
There we go.
I don't know. I've seen it all now, Luke. I've seen it all.
You think you have.
Right? At
just
22,
wait.
I've seen it all.
Just you wait.
Oh.
Don't worry, brother. We got some adventures down there.
Something
the
new brewing, right?
That's right. We need to get this vaccine, and then we need to go to Hawaii.
No. Right? Why would we go to Hawaii? I hear that's extremely expensive. We're going to get robbed.
The flights right now are $280.
Are they?
Dude, for the summer.
For the summer?
Which is insane.
If you schedule now, though, we're still going to get a great deal regardless, right?
Yeah.
Because if you schedule ahead of time.
Because there's so few people going.
Yeah, that too. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about it.
Well, if you get vaccinated, you're good. Of course.
So I hear there is still like a 10% that 5%. Doesn't have any effect. Oh, it's 5%?
Well, it's a 95% effectiveness, right?
95% effectiveness?
I thought it was
of course, 90. It's different vaccine, different
you
vaccines.
You shouldn't test your luck and, you know, and everything. But
be that one person in the in the 10%. Be that be part of that 10%.
Yeah.
So you're saying test my luck or not? You just said we'll be vaccinated.
You don't want to push your luck too much.
Okay.
But you can at least go with more peace of mind that everything's been
going. Definitely, right. Definitely. You have that peace of mind.
We need to go somewhere.
We don't need to go anywhere. You've been talking about wanting to go to clubbing, the bars.
Clubbing?
Wants to travel the world right now during COVID.
Like, are you listening off all the things that you've been talking about?
Luke, you need to relax, you know. We can't do all these things. The only thing I've mentioned
was Hawaii.
Oh, okay, sure. Sure.
This guy.
Well, what is the time? It is 9:02 p.m. PST. I think we can close out.
Something weird. Every time I look at the watch... at my watch or the time, it's always like near the top of the hour.
Really?
Yeah. Strange. It's such a weird, everything I look at, every time I look at the clock, it's either at 12 or 6.
That's your body clock telling you to look at the time.
All right, shall we close out this little episode?
Yes, we should. January 14th, 2021. Luke, what is the year?
The year of our Lord.
There you go.
2021, yes.
Yes. 9:03 p.m.
Yes, sir.
PST. Thank you to all the listeners out there.
Thank you, guys. Stay safe. And we will be back at an undetermined date.
Yeah.
If we're still alive at that point. If you're not, Ferris will take it from here.
Yeah. Right. Make sure to subscribe.